It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We were supposed to have a state budget on July 1st, and after the protracted budget stalemate between Governor Wolf and the legislature began dragging on for months, we heard that it would all be worked out by Thanksgiving. Well, Thanksgiving Day is tomorrow, and we don't appear any closer to having the budget crisis resolved than we were in July. Joining us now by phone from Harrisburg to talk about why it has all seemingly fallen apart, as well as other state issues, is 90.5 WESA's Capitol correspondent Mary Wilson. Good day, Mary.
Hi, Paul.
The governor announced a couple of weeks ago that a budget framework was in place and that he and the legislature would likely have a spending plan in place by Thanksgiving. Barring a miracle, that's not going to happen. So why did everything fall apart?
Well, it's not clear that everything has fallen apart. Lawmakers say that they are still working, that they are going to really hit the ground running after the Thanksgiving holiday, kind of around the middle of next week. But a lot of these, you know, this was a budget agreement, a tentative framework that was announced a couple weeks ago, and it has so many issues inside it that have been controversial in Pennsylvania for decades. You've got proposed changes to the state liquor stores, changes that, you know, members of the media still really aren't sure what they are, proposed changes to public pension benefits for state employees and school district employees. That is an issue that's been talked about for the past several years, and actually going back a decade or more, and it's never been an issue that the state has been able to put to bed easily. Then the governor wanted to rope in property tax relief, an effort that would essentially mean a tax shift. And whenever people hear the words tax shift, you can bet that the next words people are going to say are winners and losers. So who will pay more taxes? Who will pay less? How will the relief be doled out? And then, of course, you've got the hot potato of additional education spending. That itself is controversial. How will money be driven out to school districts? So you know, any one of these things could snarl a budget in a, you know, in a typical legislative year. This agreement, this, you know, almost year-long debate over these policy issues has included so many of these, you know, really difficult problems. And I think that's why we've seen so many stops and starts and a very fitful budget negotiation.
So you mentioned the issue of property tax relief, which is one of the big sticking points here. Where does all this leave property tax relief? Of all the things that could be thrown out as both sides try to get this down to something that they can agree on, is property tax relief the most likely thing to get tossed at this point?
As I understand it, property tax relief is effectively dead. It is not something that both sides think can be accomplished with the budget. And maybe that's the Republican majorities are driving that message a little harder than the governor's office right now. But it certainly seems as if Republican and Democratic lawmakers are saying they would like to set aside the issue of property tax relief, not only for the purpose of it being difficult to decide how they're going to get the votes to raise a sales tax that would have paid for that relief, but it's also difficult for them to agree on a funding formula for driving out the additional property tax relief money.
And we've heard Governor Wolf say that, you know, he basically had what he felt was an agreement with the legislators in the Republican-controlled legislature in the House and the Senate, that he basically had them willing to go along with this, and that they need to live up to the promises essentially that they have made. What are the Republicans saying? You know, why are they? Was there a change of heart here, or were they hearing from constituents? You know, what do you know, Mary, about why the Republicans seemingly got cold feet?
Well, I'm not sure that there's evidence that one side or the other got cold feet. I think what we saw 2 weeks ago was a very tentative outline of an agreement. You know, at the beginning of all of this, you know, announced framework, the legislative leaders and the governor were very careful to say, hey, look, this is just the beginning. We have the, you know, basic shape of what an agreement might look like. We know what issues this big deal might include, but it's not a deal yet. The details aren't hammered out, and the details matter, as you know. So, you know, a proposed sales tax increase, that was a big step forward if it was going to lead to including property tax relief. But then the next step is finding the votes for that proposed sales tax increase. And that was going to be tough no matter what side of the aisle you're looking at. We've got Republicans in the legislature, many of whom are extremely averse to raising taxes. But you've also got Democrats, especially in poorer areas and inner cities, and not to mention Pittsburgh, as you know, and Philadelphia, that we're going to be seeing an even higher sales tax increase, or a higher resulting sales tax because of the statewide proposed increase of 1.25 percentage points. And those Democratic representatives and senators were saying, well, wait a second, we're gonna put up the votes for a sales tax increase that we see as regressive, and we're not even sure what we're going to get in education money. We're not even sure what we're going to get in property tax relief. I mean, that's a really hard sell. So I think the idea of one side or the other getting cold feet or not living up to promises, I'm not sure that really gets to the heart of it. I think what was going on here was just they couldn't find the support for something that they knew was going to be tough in the first place.
So where does all this leave contractors, schools, nonprofits? It's been, you know, 5 months now that we've been without a budget, and this could conceivably drag on beyond the calendar year. Mm-hmm. And it's getting to be really tough for schools and nonprofits to hold it together. There has to be a lot of pressure coming from them on the legislators, on the governor, because I think everybody has pretty much run out of patience by now, haven't they?
Sure. Right. The pressure continues to build from all those groups you mentioned, especially school districts. County commissioners announced recently, the County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania took a vote this week that says they're going to look into suing the Commonwealth, not in a way that would get that wouldn't really touch state lawmakers, but it would give them a way to maybe pursue a similar kind of court relief. A 2009 court decision allowed state employees and what were deemed to be essential state services to continue being paid even in the event that the state budget isn't on time. And county commissioners want some kind of, you know, loophole for their bailiwicks as well. So they would like to see state aid continue flowing to, you know, what they deem to be essential services, things like children and youth, intellectual disability and mental health services, things that counties are responsible for administering, but they're not getting the state funding that they rely on to administer. So that's the local governments. You've got them hopping mad and threatening to file a lawsuit against the state. You've got school districts. I just saw that a school group released a survey showing that the budget impasse is causing fiscal hardship among their members, so they're continuing the drumbeat. Nonprofits, social services nonprofits are also continuing to keep up the pressure on the legislature. But, you know, this is not so different than the scene was in late July when we were starting to see groups mobilizing and talking about the ramifications of a halt in their state aid. So I'm not sure that this is necessarily, you know, I'm not sure that we can say that the pressure is greater now than it was a few months ago in any meaningful way. People were hopping mad in July and August, and, you know, it didn't really add much urgency. So, you know, I'm just not sure we can say, you know, that the pressure is more meaningful now than it was in the summer.
We heard, we have been hearing today that the Republicans are considering trying to get enough votes to override a potential veto from the governor on a short-term spending plan, which, of course, as you know, Governor Wolf has been extremely resistant to. He really wants to force the legislature's hand and make them come up with a real budget as he calls it, a real spending plan. But as you just said, and as we've been discussing, groups that rely on these state funds are getting very desperate. So realizing this, the legislature is trying to do an end around here and come up with this short-term spending plan. What are the chances that there will be enough votes there, or that the governor might change his mind and say, you know what, I'll go along with a short-term plan until we can come up with something permanent?
Okay, so the chances that the governor will change his mind, I really have a hard time assessing that. The governor has not left the door open even a little bit to considering a short-term spending plan. When that has been, that was considered yesterday. Senate, there apparently was a near collapse of a budget agreement between Republican majority leaders and the governor's office, and they marched up to his office, and within the matter of an hour, they were talking about trying to force through a temporary spending plan as kind of like, you know, this nuclear action, you know, this nuclear move to blow up whatever budget negotiation was in progress. An hour later, that was taken off the table. So the Senate Republicans are no longer, to be clear, no longer talking about overriding the governor's past vote on a short-term spending bill. That would free up money to schools and nonprofits and contractors and local governments. But I don't know the chances that that's off the table for good. I don't know the chances that the governor would change his mind on that. And it's just really hard to assess. Things are just, I think the best explanation I got was from an aide who said, you know, things are just so fluid right now. It's like walking in a river. You know, you put your foot in one part of it, and then the next minute everything changes. So it's just really hard to say what are the chances that things will stay the way they are today.
Yeah, must be a fun time to be covering all of these issues, Mary. We're talking with Mary Wilson. She is our Capitol correspondent and is joining us by phone from Harrisburg to talk about where things stand with the budget negotiations. And we were hopeful that there would be a budget by now. The legislature, the governor, were talking about that earlier this month, that they were hopeful of having something in place by Thanksgiving. But clearly that's not going to happen. So next week, it sounds like they're going to start working on this again. And I don't know what particulars you have on that, Mary, but clearly there needs to be some sense of urgency, because it's getting later and later to where the clock is about to strike midnight.
Right. Clock striking midnight on the budget, you're saying?
Yes.
Right. The latest mention of urgency that I've heard is, and this is going to make people laugh, but, every year politicians and kind of the political milieu here in Harrisburg goes to New York City for an event called Pennsylvania Society. It's this it goes back to the 1800s. It's this really glitzy affair, a bunch of parties, and one main anchor soiree of the weekend. And that's going to be the second weekend in December. And there have already been some stories, one of which I wrote, of lawmakers talking about how, it would look really bad if we are, laughing it up in New York City, but we haven't passed a budget back in Pennsylvania. So I've heard that the majority leader of the House has canceled his plans to go. Many lawmakers say they're still playing it by ear. They're not sure if they'll go now. And the latest I've heard this week is that they're going to try to have a budget done by then, so that they can kind of go to New York with a clear conscience. But the best laid plans
right.
tend to go awry.
Let's move on to some other issues, Mary. And in other news at the Capitol, certainly the Senate's Kathleen Kane Committee is expected to issue its recommendations today on the embattled attorney general. Where does that stand?
Well, actually, just a few minutes before noon, the special Senate committee issued its recommendations. They have voted 5-2 to move forward with a process looking into the removal of Attorney General Kathleen Kane in light of her suspended law license. So it looks like that will go ahead.
How much weight does that hold? I mean, they're voted to start a process to look at, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It just seems as though that nobody's really bringing the hammer down here.
Well, I think I totally understand what you're saying. You know, it's a vote to okay a process that will begin another process,
right,
that will initiate another procedure. You know, I totally understand. I think it does have a lot of weight. I think if anything, they're trying to be very careful not to look rash. I think they really are trying to have their I's dotted, their T's crossed, to use an overused cliche. They say that there's this kind of obscure provision of the state constitution on direct removal. It allows the Senate to have a two-thirds majority vote to remove certain state officials I'm not sure the exact wording, but let's just call it bad behavior. And then the governor can decide whether to ultimately remove that official. So they say they can use this for the state attorney general. State Attorney General Kathleen Kane totally disagrees with that interpretation of the constitutional language. But I understand what you're saying. I think it does have weight, and I think any appearance of kind of going slowly and not bringing the hammer down is just a legislative body that's trying not to leave itself open to some sort of counter lawsuit.
Meanwhile, the people that work for the Attorney General, that work for Kathleen Kane, have begun to voice their sentiments about the difficulties that this situation, the fact that her law license has been suspended, the difficulties that this is all creating. We have a soundbite here from Bruce Beamer. He's the first Deputy Attorney General, talking about the problems with the AG's office. Let's listen.
You know, so we're, I think, doing the best in a bad situation is the best way I can put it.
So when the people in her office, in her own office, are speaking this way, that clearly is not going to help her, is it?
Oh, no, no. And that was one of the most, that was the clinching testimony that was given to the Senate committee that has now recommended to move forward with a removal procedure. These four top deputies sat down and said, yeah, the fact that the Attorney General doesn't have an active law license is a huge problem. It is affecting our work already. We are still not sure how much more it could affect the work of the office. And we see real problems ahead. We are in totally uncharted waters. Again, these are all their words. And we haven't, you know, and moreover, when the Senate committee asked, what would you say about this? What would you do about this? Does this mean that she should be removed? You know, the top deputies were like, whoa, that's your call. Going back to your point, Paul, that I think a lot of people are hesitant to bring any kind of hammer down on something that's so unique, that's so new in Pennsylvania's history.
Before we move on to the situation with the acting state police commissioner and his nomination, where that stands with the Senate, we have a caller on the line who wanted to ask a question going back to the whole situation of the budget stalemate, money not being available to so many school districts and state and agencies that depend on that state money. But Jane from Bethel Park has a question concerning that. Jane, hi, you're on with Mary Wilson.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Well, my question is, do the legislators get paid while this is going on? And my other thing is a comment that if this is the way that they're going to be doing their jobs, they might as well start working on next year's budget now if it's going to be like this. It's just ridiculous.
Well,
comments up here. Thanks.
Well, Jane, you bring up a good point. One of the things that's been raised in all of this, Mary, by someone, I'm trying to remember whether it was the governor or a legislator or someone else, but that they've discussed the idea of having two-year budgets instead of 1 year so that we don't have to go through this every single fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let me take the second part of that question first,
yeah,
about working on next year's budget as in addition to the current year budget. We are just a few months away from the scheduled governor's budget address, which is supposed to outline his priorities for the next fiscal year. So it's a good point. I will say that legislative leaders and top aides have been talking about how this plan, because we're so late, should include enough revenue consideration to cover a second year. The governor has been pushing from the get-go for a budget that tries to close a two-year structural deficit, the shortfall in spending that the state would experience after 2 years, not just 1 year. So I think to their credit, there has been an emphasis on, at least to my eye, there has been an emphasis on trying to plan for pitfalls that are beyond, June 30th, 2016. I'm not sure where those are based on the conversations and near implosions of the past 5 or 6 days. Which is to say, now we're no longer looking at a proposed sales tax increase. I don't know where things stand on proposed revenue increases of other kinds. And so I don't know what that means for how much they will be able to plan for the next budget year.
And to Jane's question about whether the legislators are still getting paid.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's hard to figure out. You know, lawmakers do get paid during a budget impasse, and many of them don't go to many of them don't go down to accept their paycheck. But even the ones who do, like, you know, they'll send like a staffer down to collect their mail and they'll bring in their paycheck. But that does not mean that they are depositing their paycheck. And when I've called the Treasury to find out how to verify which lawmakers are actually depositing their paychecks, I've hit a brick wall. So it's been really hard for me to get a fair and accurate big picture of the people who are accepting their pay, collecting their pay and not depositing their pay. So the bottom line is, I don't exactly know. But they are allowed to be paid during a budget impasse.
All right. Hopefully that satisfies your curiosity, Jane, and we appreciate that phone call. Before we wrap this up, Mary, just wanted to talk about the situation with the acting state police commissioner. It looks like Tyree Blocker, Colonel Blocker, is poised for a full Senate vote after receiving unanimous approval from a key committee. Let's hear from the acting state police commissioner speaking on his nomination. This is Tyree Blocker.
And I would like to thank Governor Tom Wolf for the honor of being nominated to be the 22nd commissioner of the Pennsylvania State Police, a very proud organization with a long history.
And so we're not seeing nearly as much drama here as we did with the Marcus Brown hearings, are we, Mary?
No drama this time. You're right. This commissioner is the second pick to run the state police. The governor's first appointee was rejected by the state Senate for what Senate Republicans say are several reasons, but certainly many of those reasons stemmed from one, which was that he was not this guy, Marcus Brown, the former appointee to run the state police, was not an agency insider, and yet he wore the agency uniform that prompted a huge backlash from some current and former state troopers who said it wasn't showing respect for the agency. He wasn't the first state police commissioner or acting commissioner to do that, but now it's just a lot easier for rank-and-file current and retired troopers to make their feelings known. You know, they just start a website or they start a Facebook group or a Twitter account, some of which they did. So we saw a lot of uproar over that. This latest commissioner, acting commissioner, Colonel Tyree Blocker, is a 30-year veteran with the agency. He retired 10 years ago. He was considered a total trailblazer, an African-American trooper, a commander at a time when, shortly after the agency has struggled with racial diversity for the past, 30 years. and it's been an active struggle. He's very well respected. He's received no blowback, as far as I can tell, from rank and file troopers. Although I haven't seen the State Troopers Association issue any kind of statement for or against his appointment, and it looks like he's going to just sail through a confirmation vote by the full Senate, which is expected. That vote is expected to be held next month.
So by the end of the year, his job title will be finalized.
I'm told to expect that, yes.
Okay, very good. Well, we are really up to date with a lot of things that are going on at the Capitol on this a busy day for you, even though it's the day before Thanksgiving. Mary Wilson, our Capitol correspondent, joining us from Harrisburg. Mary, as always, great thanks.
Thank you.
And coming up, as we head into the holiday shopping season, what is the impact of high-profile hacking on the economy? That's next on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.